Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
First though, this morning, actor Liam Cunningham being cast in Game of Thrones, well, it changed a lot of things. It brought him huge recognition and a lot of more work offers. Now Liam is working again with the people who brought us Game of Thrones in a new Netflix series called Three Body Problem. It's a complex sci-fi story that spans several periods in time, and Liam's character has the task of saving the world, no less. Liam Cunningham, good morning to you.
Good morning, Miriam. I was well cast. I was born to save the world.
I love that line. Listen, just before we get into Three Body Problem and trying to explain it to my audience and how you're going to save the world, remind my listeners, Liam, if you don't mind, how you got to this point. I mean, you're hugely successful now, but you weren't exactly an overnight success. Would that be correct?
That's right. It was 30 years to be an overnight success. Yeah, it took me that amount of time. Yes, I suppose, yeah, it's fair to say that Game of Thrones got my mush on the world stage. I mean, I'd popped up here and there, and obviously with stuff like working with the lovely Cillian Murphy and Wynn that Shakes the Barley, you get these brief moments where you shine. But I suppose on a regular basis, the Game of Thrones epic threw me out there and let people see my head for good or for bad.
Did you realise or imagine, Liam, when you started out doing Game of Thrones, that it would be as huge as it became?
No, nobody did. I don't. If anybody said they knew it was going to be turned into a cultural phenomenon, they're lying through their teeth. I knew it was going to be good because I'd read the first episode. I was actually up for another part in the show, and the old Hollywood thing where they say they've decided to go in another direction, which usually means you'll never hear from them again. But true to their word, they came back for season two and they went, look, we have this really nice role for you. Please, please come back and have a meeting about it. And that was the old Davos Seaworth character that I played. So they were, as I say, true to their word.
And how much, like you explained, it was a good 30 years, even though you'd done these other great parts. But can you quantify, Liam, in a sense, how much your life has changed as a result of being in such a big series as Game of Thrones?
Well, to disappoint other actors who may be listening to this, you do get a lot more visible, and there's a lot more scripts come in. However, there's a similar percentage of quality scripts that come in. So, in other words, if you're getting two scripts and you get really lucky, and Game of Thrones comes in, when you're getting 50 scripts coming in, there's still only, if you're very lucky, there's still only one Game of Thrones in there. So there's plenty of quantity, but there's not much quality. So I don't need to drive a very expensive supercar that badly that I have to take anything that comes along just for the money. I'm very lucky to be allowed to do this, and the least I can do is try and do the things that I think are of higher quality. I think you owe that to the luck if you manage to get a bit.
Absolutely. And look, you've never lost who you are. You were once an electrician, of course. I love that story. Tell me about it, when someone actually fainted when they met you and your wife's reaction.
Yeah. Well, I just told her it was a funny story. I wasn't telling her the story to make her treat me like a god. Well, we were in Brazil and in Sao Paulo. And we were doing a kind of a special exhibition of the show. And we surprised a bunch of super fans on the top of the terrace at the top of this hotel. When we walked around the corner, they didn't know what they were there for. There was just these like 25 fans looking at us with their jaws on the ground. And so they set up a table and we were doing something nice for them. We signed T-shirts and books. And there was a photographer at the other side of the table. I noticed something was up when there was a couple of people going by, specifically ladies, and there was a couple of them crying as they walked by, which I, you know, thought was a bit odd. And this lady walked in front of me. I could see a look in her eye that was a bit odd, and her eyelids started to flutter, and her legs went out from under her. And I dived across the table to grab her, and the photographer dropped it. You know, he had the camera on a string around his neck, and both of us had to dive to grab her from hurting herself, and she hit the ground. So I was just telling it as an amusing antidote to my better half, and I just got a tusk from her.
And I think from your perspective, you say she married an electrician and she ended up with this lad on the telly.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. God love her. Yeah. She allowed me, because I didn't start doing it until I was 29. So we were about, whatever, six, seven years married, and then turning around and requesting. I didn't announce it. I requested, how do you fancy love going into abject poverty for the next while? And she's always, you know, always been incredibly respectful of whatever harebrained idea I come up with. And she let me off the leash to do it and was very patient for a long time. But luckily enough, I don't sort of give up easily. And it's worked out, I suppose, certainly at the moment.
And of course, you grew up, Liam, didn't you, in the inner city here in Dublin. Where did you grow up and where did the idea of actually becoming an actor come from?
Well, I grew up in the North Wall. My mum was from Sheriff Street. My dad lived just over the hill in just off Abercorn Road. And I did most of my growing, well, not most, but until about 7 or 8. Then I moved to the dizzy heights of Coolock when I was like 8 or 9. And I was there till I got married, till I was 22. And then I went to Africa. I took leave from I was in the ESB for like 11 years and went to Africa. One of the places I was looking after was the National Park, which is the size of Belgium, like 16,000 elephants, all the big five, the whole lot. But I was on leave. So after 3.5 years and I came back, they stuck me in a yellow van and doing work around Drimnagh and Morganstown. And it just didn't have the same glamour. So I was looking for a distraction. I didn't have any harebrained ideas. I was really looking for a hobby to kind of distract me from the mundane side of my obtaining wages. But when I started doing it, I discovered that I just loved it. And I loved I was just incredibly curious about the process and how to make it work. And I still find that working it out, getting it believable, getting these pieces of ink off a page and doing it so that people laugh and cry and run along with your character and all that. I just love that magic. If that ever stops being magical to me, I hope I have the wherewithal to just walk away and let someone else have a go.
Well, it was magical. Talk about the Game of Thrones. So listen, in terms of Three Body Problem, when the Game of Thrones guys came to you with this, I assume you thought, I'm going with these guys because they're such amazing writers.
Well, not only that, and this is absolutely what happened. I was in talks for another very big project, and I'd had a couple of meetings. I hadn't said yes, and I got it. And obviously, the boys did their intel, and I got a phone call saying, and they basically said, the phone call lasted about a minute, and they said, "You're not going with them. You're coming with us." And I went, "Okay," and I basically hung up the phone, and then my professional head kicked in where I said, I don't even know what the project is. It could be a week's work. And then these glorious scripts for Three Body Problem landed on me hall floor, or probably email, to be honest. I read these scripts, and it was this mad character of Thomas Wade that they had essentially written for me in the books. Oh, I'll give you a laugh here, Miriam. The character apparently in the books, I didn't read the books, is in his 40s. He's ex-American CIA and has a resemblance to Hugh Jackman. So they obviously didn't have the budget for that, so they went to me.
So listen, explain. We're going to listen to a clip now. It's kind of sci-fi. It spans a really long period. Tell me about your character, Thomas Wade.
Okay. Wade is a very enigmatic, shadowy intelligence operative. And he appears in the story because there's loads of scientists are dying, committing suicide. Not only that, but all their cutting edge technology, like the Hadron Collider all the whole nanofibers, nanotubes, all the cutting edge stuff that we're doing in the universities and scientific labs at the moment are going haywire. They're breaking down. The scientists are dying. The whole lot. So Wade shows his face, and we discover the reason for this, and it's an existential threat to the human race. And myself and the magnificent Benedict Wong are a team. I'm his boss, and we go out to and when we find out what it is, we end up that we're in charge of saving the human race. Just a small job, Miriam, a small job.
We're going to have a clip here now of Three Body Problem. Let's listen to it now.
Someone or something is targeting scientists.
They're going after our best and brightest. There's someone behind everything. You just have to dig. Whatever it is watching and listening.
You use your own accent for Thomas Wade. He's definitely a dub.
Oh, yeah. Well, they wrote it for me, yeah. And not only that, Benedict, when you hear what they did to Benedict, they did a Zoom meeting during lockdown with him, and the character, they sent him an email, the character breakdown, where he said he was the son of Hong Kong immigrants and grew up in Manchester and then moved down to London when he's 20 years old. This is the character breakdown. And it wasn't until he said yes that Alexander Wu admitted to him that they just copied and pasted his Wikipedia page to get him to do it.
That's so good.
It's a great compliment. It's a great compliment. And with me, I've been working with him for 10 years. So I've been auditioning for Thomas Wade for 10 years with him and didn't realise.
You mentioned Benedict Wong there. Listeners probably know him from Doctor Strange and The Martian. You also said in one interview that the script this time, it was so good, you didn't even bother to ad lib. Is it a little like theatre for the two of you?
100%. I mean, if you're at the Royal Shakespeare Company, which I was for a year and a half, you're not going to look at Hamlet and go, you know, I think I'm a bit... I don't think I need to say that line. I think I could play it. You service the words, and you have to remember that David and Dan, and let's not forget Alexander Wu, who is the third showrunner on this, who's a major part of it as well. These guys, I don't know if you know this, but David and Dan met in Trinity College. They were doing postgrad work there, and essentially David and Dan, one of them is a bit of an expert on Joyce, the other one is Beckett. They know their words. And I essentially ended up in Game of Thrones because they'd seen Hunger, with the movie with Michael Fassbender. They knew I could handle long scenes. That's what we did. Me and Benny, when we were rehearsing, because there were a lot of scenes in them, we would essentially just run it as if we were doing theatre. The glamorous life of an actor, you're picked up at whatever, 5 in the morning, you're working till 6 or 7 in the evening, you grab some fast food, and then you end up, and we did this during lockdown, you end up on FaceTime or Zoom or whatever it is, and you're running lines to prepare yourself for the next day's work. So you're not holding a crew up trying to get a scene together. So myself and Benny took pride in being able to hit the ground running. So we weren't holding a very, very expensive crew waiting for us to be ready.
And the amazing Jonathan Pryce, he's in it too, isn't he, Liam?
Yeah, he's absolutely glorious. He's really, really good in this. And a totally different character from what he played in Game of Thrones. And you have to remember the reams of dialogue when he was playing the High Sparrow there. And there's a similar sort of thing with his character, you'll see when you watch it, with him playing Mike Evans. And he has quite a journey in this. It's a glorious... glorious story, this, and people should not. I know there's people out there who kind of go, well, science fiction is not really my bag. These are the same people that, and I was one of them on Game of Thrones, who fantasy was not really my bag, but they burst that genre open. And this is a really human story, which kind of focuses, there's a focus on what in the show is called the Oxford Five, which are these wonderful students at Oxford University who are incredibly human, and their lives, their loves, their unrequited loves, all that sort of stuff. But they're also hugely talented scientists, and I roped them in because I need their help to take on the threat and make their lives very, very difficult. So it's a thriller, I think, if anything. But because we're dealing a lot with science and quantum entanglement and theoretical physics and all that sort of stuff, so it's really cool. It's not boring. It's as in educationally, we're not there to educate anyone. It's that we have to rope in this stuff to try and face the threat of what's coming.
So it's a really good time for Irish actors, isn't it? I mean, you're starring in this. It's on Netflix now, Three Body Problem. But Cillian just got his Oscar. You mentioned earlier, you worked obviously with him in The Wind That Shakes the Bardy, also in Breakfast on Pluto, and I think another one called Sweeney Barrett. Did you spot his talent early on, Liam?
I'll tell you something. As soon as I saw him, I nearly eloped with him. The man is gorgeous. he's incredibly talented. You know, he's been in the game a long time. I think Sweeney Barrett, that I did with him and Brendan Gleeson, that was one of the first things he did. And then we did Breakfast on Pluto, and you saw the transformation of him there. I mean, you know, with Oppenheimer, he's in almost every frame playing this quite reserved character in a three-hour movie, and most deservedly got the Oscar. In fact, I did a podcast last May with Eddie Jordan. I'm a big Formula One fan, and when I did a podcast, he just finished the movie, and I predicted, and I'm stupid, I should have put a 50-euro note, because I predicted that he was going to pick up the Oscar for Best Actor, and whatever it is, 8-9 months later, he did. He's wonderful, and we've a whole list here. Andrew Scott, I was on stage in London with Billy Rhodes' play. I mean, look at Paul Mescal, Jesse Buckley. Look where we are with Saoirse Ronan.
I know.
And you know, that's not even to, never mind Gabriel and Liam Neeson and everyone. And listen, we punch well above our weight. And I think, I don't know what to put it down to. Obviously talent, but we're storytellers, Miriam. You know, we love a yarn. We love sitting over a small sherry in a pub and spinning yarns. It's in our blood.
Yeah, I think that's so true. You mentioned Formula One there. You love it. Do you actually go to watch the track, or do you prefer to follow from the safety of your home?
I do go to the track. I normally do probably 2 or 3 a year. I used to do about 5, but I spoil myself. Hopefully this year I'll be at Monaco and Silverstone, the British Grand Prix, and Monza. I always like going to Milan. Yeah, I've gone to loads of them. Well, I watch all the races live unless I'm at them. And it's very similar to what we do. It's a circus. They go to 23 different countries throughout a year with an enormous army of people to get these cars racing around the track. And, you know, it's similar to the whole, you know, working on location with a movie crew, you know. So I've a bit of an affinity for that. And I love design and engineering and all that sort of thing and the competitive nature of it. But at the same time, it's the world's most expensive train set. All these very quite wealthy people. So it's very expensive toys for rich boys. And, you know, so I hang on to the side of that. But I love the competitive nature of it.
You're a big biker too, though. Where'd you go on the motorbike?
Well, it's funny. I think I got my car driving license in 1979. And people would have laughed and pointed at me if they'd have watched me for the last year driving around Dublin and around Ireland with a yellow tabard with an L plate on the front and the back. So whatever it is, 43 years later, I passed my test a few weeks ago to drive my my Italian motorbike. But I have the tent, the panniers, all that. I tour. Me and a mate go off and pitch tents in a field in lovely Ireland. But I was waiting to pass my test because I'm planning to hit Europe and do some serious driving on the back of the bike. Yeah, I'd love riding a bike. You don't drive a bike, you ride a bike. It's a totally different animal.
Final question. You said earlier in the interview, of course, you used to be an electrician. You grew up here, you know, in the city of Dublin, North Strand. When you look back on your glorious career now, Liam, and actually you're more successful right now than you have ever been, do you feel incredibly grateful? And what do you put it down to, apart from your own talent? Why do you think your career has gone so well?
Because I love it, Miriam. When I started off, I literally used to be out because I didn't know much before I started acting. I think I'd been to about four plays and my now wife dragged me along to them when we were courting. But when I started doing it, and like I said earlier on about the problem solving and trying to get it right, I found it fascinating. And I would literally, naivety, ignorance is a wonderful tool that I used to try and learn stuff and try and get it right. And I would constantly run lines and repetition. And I mean, if you saw me work, you'd have me locked up. It's digging, and try and find out what's right, get the rhythms on things right, and get the humor into things. Not taking it too seriously and being able to be, you know, analytical about it. And you can only do that. I can only get those juices rolling if the writing is good. It's like a knife in the heart when it's not good, and it's a joy when it is.
Wow. Well, Liam Cunningham, thrilled with your success. Everyone is. Three Body Problem. It's streaming right now on Netflix. It's a fascinating series. Thanks so much for speaking to me this morning and for staying such a great guy. Thanks, Liam.
Thank you very much, Miriam. Much appreciated.
Lots of people texting in about Liam Cunningham. I love the fact that he began as an electrician, as you know. And Maggie says, "Hi, Miriam. Liam installed a night meter for me in my home in the 1980s. He was really lovely. Told me the meter would not be worth it. Waste of time, as he said. He was dead right. Congrats, Liam. You're a true Dubliner." Another says, "I'm on episode 8 of Three Body Problem. It's a great show." And Sheila Cork says, "Liam is just so good in Three Body Problem. Love him in everything he does."